the door and gasped. Before her was a wide, domed room constructed from interlocking sheets of plex. It was a window, a giant, bubble-like window with the entire galaxy spilling out beyond. And on their side, everything was green. Large hydroponic planters were arranged in spiraling rows, bursting with broad leaves, perky sprouts, and dark, fat vegetables. Handwritten labels were affixed to skewers at regular intervals. The alphabet used was not one that Rosemary recognized. Some of the plants were flowering, and delicate trellises encouraged the climbers to grow tall. A branching path stretched out from the doorway, lined with repurposed cargo crates and food tins filled with bushy tufts of grass. Bits of tech junk painted with bright shapes peeked out here and there, adding dabs of color. At the end of the path were three steps, which led into a sunken garden. A ramshackle fountain chattered quietly there, with a few benches and chairs nearby. Behind the benches, small, decorative trees stretched up towards the sun lamps that hung overhead. But once Rosemary noticed the lamps, her attention was drawn back to the bubbled window, to the stars and planets and nebulae waiting just outside. After a few seconds of gaping, Rosemary had the presence of mind to note the smaller details. The window frame looked worn and of a completely different make from the rest of the room. The hydroponic planters were of all shapes and sizes and were banged up enough to suggest that they'd been purchased secondhand. But the room was one of those strange, wonderful places that benefited from a lack of uniformity. The plants were healthy and well-tended, but somehow the scuffs and dents and painted scraps were what made them truly come alive. Rosemary blinked. This is incredible. And necessary, believe it or not, said Sissix. It may seem like an extravagance, but it's got three useful purposes. One, living plants ease the strain on our air filters. Two, we can grow some of our own food, which saves us money on market trips, and is healthier than eating stuff kept in stasis all the time. Three, most important, it keeps us from going crazy after being cooped up in here for a few 10 days. The rec room's good for a moment of quiet, but this is where we all come to really slow down. A lot of long-haul ships have places like this. Ours is the best, though, if you'd like my entirely unbiased opinion. It's beautiful, said Rosemary, tearing her eyes away from the window. She thought for a moment, remembering the opaque dome she'd seen from the depot. Why didn't I see this coming in? Neat trick, isn't it? Said Sissix. It's made out of switchplex, so it's only transparent when we want it to be. Gives us some privacy, and keeps things cool if we're near the sun. It used to be part of some Harmagian's yacht. Kizzy and Jenks have a whole network of scavenger buddies who give us a call whenever they find some scrap we might put to good use. The dome has been the jackpot so far. She gestured for Rosemary to follow her. Come on, I'll introduce you to the guy who grows all this stuff. They followed the right side of the path to an oval-shaped dining table set for dinner. The chairs surrounding the table were mismatched, and about a third of them designed to fit non-human posteriors. Soft lights hung from long wires over the table, capped with shades of different colors. It was far from the fanciest table Rosemary had ever seen. The napkins were faded, a few plates had dents, the condiments were all cheap brands, but it felt inviting nonetheless. Near the table was a counter, with three stools on one side and a big kitchen on the other. The smell of baking bread and sizzling herbs flooded Rosemary's nostrils, and her body reminded her of how long it had been since she last ate. Her entire torso felt hollow. Hey! Sissix called over the counter. Come meet our new crewmate. Rosemary hadn't seen the curtain covering the doorway in the back until a member of the strangest species she'd ever seen threw it aside and lumbered forward. The sapient. He, Sissix had said, was at least twice Rosemary's size. He was rotund and fleshy, with dappled gray skin. She would have pegged him as some sort of amphibian if it weren't for the tufts of long whiskers that stood out from his balloon-like cheeks. The majority of his face was dominated by a broad, split upper lip, which Rosemary found endearing, though she couldn't say why. She thought back to the picture programs of ancient earth animals she'd pored over as a kid. If you crossed an otter with a gecko, then made it walk like a six-legged caterpillar, you'd be getting somewhere. The sapient's legs were especially difficult to categorize because they could have just as easily been arms. He had six of them, whatever they were, all identical. When he came through the door, he'd been walking on one pair and holding two tubs of food with the others. But once he set the tubs down, he folded his body down onto two pairs and walked to the counter. "Well, well, well," the sapient rumbled. There was a weird harmony to his voice, as if five people were talking at once. As she continued to process his appearance, Rosemary noticed that he was wearing human-style clothing. His upper torso, if you could call it that, was covered by a huge, short-sleeved shirt printed with a logo of a green human thumb zooming through space. The surrounding text was printed not in clip, but in Ensk. Little John's Plant Emporium, your one-stop shop for transgalactic hydroponics. Extra armholes had been cut into the sides to allow for his middle pair of limbs. His lower section was covered by an enormous pair of drawstring trousers. Or not trousers, more like a pouch with room for legs. The sapient's whole face curved upward in a surreal approximation of a smile. "I bet you've never seen one of me before," he said. Rosemary smiled, relieved that he'd broken the ice. "Can't say that I have," she said. The sapient bustled about behind the counter as he spoke. "Interspecies sensitivity training always falls a bit short when you see something new, doesn't it? The first time I saw one of your lanky brown things, I felt dead quiet." "And for his species," Sissix said, "that's really saying something." "That it is," said the sapient. "Silence doesn't suit us." A sound exploded from his mouth, a warbling, rumbling coo. Rosemary glanced at Sissix as discordant bursts continued to flow from the sapient's strange mouth. "He's laughing," Sissix whispered. The noise cut off, and the sapient tapped his chest.
"I'm Dr. Chef."
"I'm Rosemary," she said. "You have an interesting name."
"Well, it's not my actual name, but I cook the food and I work in the med bay when the need arises. I am what I do."
"What species are you?"
"I am a grum, and I'm currently male."
Rosemary had never heard of a grum. Had to be a non-GC species. "Currently?" she asked.
"Biological sex is a transitional state of being for my species. We begin life as female, become male once our egg-laying years are over, then end our lives as something neither here nor there."
Dr. Chef reached over the counter and placed a cup of juice and a small plate of thick, grainy crackers in front of Rosemary.
"Here you go. Sugar, salt, vitamins, calories. Dinner will be soon, but you look ready to faint."
He shook his head at Sissix.
"I hate D-pods."
"Oh, the stars, thank you." Rosemary fell upon the crackers. In some distant part of her head, she knew that they were nothing special, but in that moment, they were the best thing that she had ever eaten. "May I ask your given name?" she said, once her mouth was less full.
"You won't be able to say it."
"Can I try?" Again, the warbling laugh.
"Okay, get ready."
Dr. Chef's mouth opened, and a cacophony fell out. Layers upon layers of baffling sounds. It lasted a full minute. His cheeks puffed three times once it ended.
That's me, he said. He pointed at his throat. Branching windpipes, 6 sets of vocal cords, there's not one word in my language that doesn't have several sounds blended together. Rosemary felt a little stunned. Learning Clip cannot have been easy for you. Oh, it wasn't, said Dr. Chef. And I won't lie, it's still tiring at times. Synchronizing my vocal cords takes a lot of effort. Why not just use a talk box? Dr. Chef shook his head, the skin on his cheeks shivering. I don't like implants that aren't medically necessary. Besides, what's the point of talking to different species if you don't take the time to learn their words? Seems like cheating to simply think things and let a little box do the talking for you. Rosemary took another sip of juice. Her head was already feeling better. Does your name mean something in your language? It does. I am a grove of trees where friends meet to watch the moons align during a sunset in mid. I guess you'd say autumn. Mind you, that's just the first bit. It also includes my mother's name and the town in which I was born, but I think I'll leave it there, or else you'll be listening to me translate all night. He laughed again. And you? I know most humans don't put much stock in names, but does yours have any meaning? Well, I don't think my parents meant anything by it, but rosemary is a kind of plant. Dr. Chef leaned forward, resting his weight against his upper arms. A plant? What kind of plant? Nothing special. Just a herb. Just an herb? Said Dr. Chef, his whiskers trembling. Just a herb, she says. Uh-oh, said Sissix. You said the magic word. Rosemary, rosemary, said Dr. Chef, taking her hand. Herbs are my very favorite thing. They combine both the medicinal and the gastronomical, which, as you may have guessed, are my 2 best subjects. I am an avid collector of herbs. I pick up new specimens wherever I go. He paused, grumbling and whistling to himself. I don't think I've ever heard your namesake herb. Is it for eating or healing? Eating, said Rosemary. I think it goes in soups. Breads, too, I guess. Soups! Oh, I like soups, said Dr. Chef. His solid black eyes shifted to Sissix. We're making a stop at Port Coriel soon, right? Yep, said Sissix. Someone there will have it for sure. I'll send a message to my old friend Drave. He'll know where to look. He's good at finding food-related things. His mouth curved up as he looked back to Rosemary. See? You've got a proper name after all. Now, you finish those crackers. I'm going to check on the bugs. He bustled back into the kitchen, growling and sighing as he bent over the grill. Rosemary wondered if he might be humming. Sissix leaned close to Rosemary and whispered, her voice shielded by Dr. Chef's vocalizations and the general sounds of cooking. Don't ask about his homeworld. Oh, Rosemary said. Okay. Trust me on this. And don't ask about his family either. It's not good dinner talk. I'll explain later. Dr. Chef proudly lifted a large arthropod from the grill with a pair of tongs. Its shell was blackened, and its legs curled under in even rows. It was about the size of Rosemary's hand, wrist to fingertip. I hope you like Red Coast bugs. Fresh, too, not from the Stacy. I have a few breeding tanks in the back. Sissix gave Rosemary a friendly nudge. We only get fresh ones for special occasions. I've never had them, but they smell wonderful, Rosemary said. Wait, Sissix said. You've never had Red Coast bugs. I've never met a human who's never had Red Coast bugs. I've always lived planetside, Rosemary said. We don't eat many bugs on Mars. She felt guilty just saying it. Insects were cheap, rich in protein, and easy to cultivate in cramped rooms, which made them an ideal food for spacers. Bugs had been part of the Exodus fleet's diet for so long that even extrasolar colonies still used them as a main staple. Rosemary had, of course, at least heard of Red Coast bugs, The old story went that a short while after the Exodus fleet had been granted refugee status within the Galactic Commons, a few human representatives had been brought to some Aeluan colony to discuss their needs. One of the more entrepreneurial humans had noticed clusters of large insects skittering over the red sand dunes near the coastline. The insects were a mild nuisance to the Aeluans, but the humans saw food, and lots of it. Red coast bugs were swiftly adopted into the Exodans' diet, and nowadays you could find plenty of Aeluans and extrasolar humans who had become wealthy from their trade. Rosemary's admission that she'd never eaten red coast bugs meant that she was not only poorly traveled, but that she belonged to a separate chapter of human history. She was a descendant of the wealthy meat-eaters who had first settled Mars, the cowards who had shipped livestock through space while nations starved back on Earth. Even though Exodans and Solans had long ago put their old grudges behind them, mostly, her privileged ancestry was something she had become ashamed of. It reminded her all too well of why she had left home. Sissix eyed her with suspicion. "Have you eaten mammals? I mean the real thing, not vat grown." "Sure, there are a few cattle ranches on Mars." Sissix recoiled, making sounds of amusement and disgust. "Oh, no, yuck." She looked apologetic. "Sorry, Rosemary. That's just so bleh." "Psh! They're just big sandwiches on hooves," said Jenks, walking in with a grin. "I've had planet-side beef, too, you know. It's awesome!" "Oh, gross. You're all gross," Sissix said, laughing. "I'll stick with bugs, thanks," said a male human voice. Rosemary turned and stood up. "Welcome aboard," Captain Santoso said, shaking her hand. "It's good to finally meet you."
"You as well, Captain," Rosemary said. "I'm very happy to be here."
"Please, just call me Ashby," he said with a smile. He glanced around, looking for someone.
"Did Corbin give you the grand tour?"
"He started it off," Sissix said, taking one of Rosemary's crackers. "I took over so he could run some tests."
"Well, that was nice of you," Ashby said.
He stared at Sissix for a moment, asking a question that Rosemary couldn't discern. He turned his attention back to her.
"I'm afraid I won't have much time to show you the ropes over the next couple of days. We're tunneling tomorrow, and there's always some odds and ends to take care of afterwards, but I'm sure you need some time to settle in anyway. Once we've put this job behind us, you and me can sit down and start going through my reports."
"You have my sympathies," Sissix said, patting Rosemary's shoulder.
"They're not that bad," Ashby said. Dr. Sheff cleared his throats pointedly.
"Okay, they're pretty bad."
Ashby shrugged and smiled.
"But hey, that means you have a job."
Rosemary laughed.
"Don't worry. I'm one of those weirdos who likes form work."
"Thank the stars for that," Ashby said.
"We're a good crew, but form work is not one of our strengths."
"Sissix!" Kizzy cried, entering the room. "I need to talk to you about the super scandalous, sexy vid I saw today."
Ashby's eyes fell shut. "Neither is tact."
Sissix looked bemused. "Kizzy, I told you I am done watching your vids. I swear, humans are the only species who can make coupling tacky."
"No! Listen, it's important!"
Kizzy strolled behind the counter, inspecting Dr. Chef's cooking. She had shed the grubby jumpsuit in exchange for a small yellow jacket, a skirt that could only be described as a short petticoat, bright orange polka dot tights, a massive pair of boots trussed up in all manner of buckles and straps, and a scattering of cloth flowers woven through her hair. The ensemble would have been clownish on anyone else, but somehow Kizzy made it work.
"It was a multi-species vid, and I now have a bucket full of questions about Andrisk anatomy."
"You've seen me naked before," Sissix said. "You've probably seen a lot of Andrisks naked before."
"Yes, but Sissix, the flexibility on this guy, holy shit!"
She stuck her hand towards a bowl of vegetables. Dr. Chef smacked her wrist with a spatula without even glancing her way. Sissix sighed.
"What's the name of this vid?"
"Prison Planet 6, the zero-G spot. And we're done, Ashby said. Honestly, would one day of being polite have killed you?
Hey, I'm being polite, Jenks said. I didn't even mention Prison Planet 7.
Ashby sighed and turned to Rosemary. There's probably still time for you to call the Depot back if you've changed your mind. Rosemary shook her head. I haven't had dinner yet. Dr. Chef let out a hearty, squawking laugh.
At last, someone with the same priorities as me.
Sissix leaned across the counter. Kizzy, your shoes are amazing. I wish I could wear shoes.
I know, right?
Kizzy exclaimed, lifting her right foot as if she had never seen it before.
Behold my wonder boots!
All the kick-ass of an Aeluon assault squad combined with total ergonomic perfection. It's podiatric madness. What are they? Are they big, tough stompers? Are they comfy kick rounds? No one knows. They are feats of science happening right over my socks as we speak. She turned to Dr. Chef, who was pulling a pan of rolls out of the oven. She plucked up one and tossed it between her fingers. Stars, these smell good. Come to my face, lovely bun. Ashby turned to Rosemary. You're good at languages, right? Rosemary dragged her attention away from the mech tech, who was doing a little dance of pain after searing her tongue on the hot bun. I do all right, she said. Truthfully, she was very good with languages, but that wasn't the sort of thing one said to new colleagues over dinner. Well, if you're going to live on this ship, you're going to have to learn to speak Kizzy. It's one of those you sort of pick up as you go along, said Sissix, who had begun shuttling heaping bowls of food to the table. Rosemary picked up a bowl filled with some mashed purple root vegetable and followed suit. As she set the bowl down beside the place settings, she was struck with an odd realization. This was the first time she'd ever set a table.
Oh, by the way, Kizzy said, hopping over to Ashby. Air filter's fixed, but I was so scared I was going to be late for dinner, and I had to change, too. So I just bundled up all the wires into the wall, good enough so they wouldn't catch fire or anything, and I promise I'll finish it up right after we eat. I promise, promise.
If you want, Kiz, I can take care of cleaning up the cables on my own, Jenks said. I know you've got a hell of a to-do list before tomorrow.
This is why you're the best, Kizzy said.
She met Rosemary's eyes and pointed at Jenks.
Isn't he the best?
Okay, Dr. Chef said, lifting a platter stacked with steaming bugs. Grubs up! Sissix, Kizzy, and Jenks all sat down on the same side of the table. As if on cue, Corbin entered the room. He sat on the opposite side. He said nothing. Neither did anyone else. Ashby, at least, gave him a polite nod. The captain sat at the head of the table. Dr. Chef took the chair opposite him. Ashby gestured for Rosemary to take the empty seat to his right. He smiled at everyone and raised his glass of water. To our new crew member, he said, and to a problem-free day of work tomorrow. They all clinked glasses.
I should have got something fancier to drink, Dr. Chef muttered.
We all need water, Doc, Ashby said. And besides, you've rather outdone yourself. He nodded at the heaping bowls of food. Rosemary clapped a hand over her stomach to muffle the growling. Filling one's plate was a free-for-all affair. Bowls and trays were traded back and forth without following any clear pattern. By the time the serving bowls had all been set back down, Rosemary's plate was stacked with salad, a heap of the mashed purple stuff, Tuscan roots, Dr. Chef had called them, two grainy rolls, and one of the Red Coast bugs. Melted butter flecked with shredded herbs oozed out from the gaps in the bug's spindly joints. Rosemary noticed that there was a tiny hatch cut into the shell, where Dr. Chef had administered seasonings before grilling them. The bug was nightmarish to look at, but it smelled incredible, and Rosemary was hungry enough to try anything. There was just one problem. She didn't know how to eat it. Sissix must have seen her hesitancy, for the Andrisk woman caught her eyes across the table. Sissix slowly, deliberately raised her knife and fork with her four-fingered hands and began removing the shell in a practiced manner, popping off the legs first, then working open the underbelly at the seams. Rosemary mirrored her actions,
trying not to appear too obvious in her lack of expertise. She appreciated Sissek's subtlety, but she could not ignore the irony of an Andrisk teaching her how to eat a human dish. If Rosemary had committed any transgressions in the act of dismantling the bug, none of the other crew members mentioned it. They were too busy shoveling down food, heaping praise on Dr. Chef for his cooking, and laughing at jokes that Rosemary couldn't follow. Her embarrassment at being unfamiliar with the food disappeared the moment she placed the first bite of bug in her mouth. Tender, savory, comforting. A bit like crab, only denser. The rolls were hearty and hot, the mash salty sweet, the salad, picked from the garden that day, she was told, crisp and refreshing. All her fears about spacer food were eradicated. She could get used to bugs and hydroponic vegetables easily. Once her hunger had been quelled enough for her to eat at a less desperate pace, Rosemary noticed the empty chair, an unused place setting that separated her from Corbin. "Who sits here?" she asked. "Ah," said Dr. Chef. "Tricky question. No one, technically, but it's meant for Ohan." Rosemary registered the name. "Right. Sissek said Z's nocturnal," she said, choosing a neutral pronoun. It was the only polite thing to do when no gender signifiers had been given. Ashby smiled and shook his head. "They. Ohan's a cyanet pair. Male, but we still say they." Rosemary thought back to the airlock. Lovey hadn't been talking about a navigator, but a navigator. Her mind raced with excitement. Cyanets were the stuff of urban legends back home, a reclusive race who could conceptualize multidimensional space as easily as a human could do algebra. Their mental aptitude was not innate, however. Cyanet culture was structured around a neurovirus they called the Whisperer. The effects of the Whisperer were largely unknown to the rest of the GC. Cyanets barred other species from researching it. But what was known was that it altered the brain functions of the host. As far as Rosemary knew, all cyanets were infected with the virus during childhood, at which point they ceased thinking of themselves as individuals, but rather as plural entities, a pair. They were then encouraged to go out into the galaxy in order to share the Whisperer's gifts with species that could never know them firsthand. The virus had yet to jump to other species. Cyanet pairs' ability to think in ways other species couldn't made them invaluable members of research projects, science labs, and tunneling ships. In all the hullabaloo of getting herself out to the Wayfarer, the likelihood of meeting a cyanet pair hadn't occurred to her. "Do they not eat dinner with us?" she asked, trying to hide just how badly she wanted to meet this person, people. The plural thing was going to take some practice. Ashby shook his head. "Pairs are paranoid about their health. They're wary of anything that might inadvertently affect the Whisperer. Ohan never leaves the ship, and they don't eat the same food that we do. Though it's perfectly sanitary, I assure you," Dr. Chef said. "That's why I had to get flashed when I docked," Rosemary said. "Lovey said I had a few contaminants one of the crew couldn't handle." "Ah, yes," Dr. Chef said. "We'll need to update your Immubot's databases. We can take care of that tomorrow." "It's not just a health thing," Sissek said. "Pairs don't socialize well, even with other pairs. Ohan doesn't leave their room much. They're... you'll see when you meet them. They're on their own little plane." "You would be too, if you could map out tunnels in your head," Jenks said. "But Dr. Chef always sets a place for them anyway," Kizzy said, tucking a bite of food into her cheek. "Because he's a sweetie. I want them to know that they're always welcome," Dr. Chef said, "even if they can't eat with us." "Aw," said Kizzy and Jenks in unison. "Technically, I don't eat dinner either," Sissy explained. Rosemary had already noticed that while Sissix had taken some of everything, her portions were tiny. "I just eat little bits of stuff throughout the day. One of the benefits of not being able to keep myself warm is not needing as much food." She smiled. But I like sitting down with everybody in the evening. It's one of my favorite human customs.
I heartily agree, said Dr. Chef, taking another Red Coast bug. Especially since I only eat once a day.
He balanced the bug atop a tall stack of empty shells. Rosemary counted six.
So what do cyanet pears eat? Rosemary asked.
A violent ripple passed through Dr. Chef's cheeks.
Even with his unfamiliar anatomy, Rosemary got the feeling that it was an expression of disgust.
This horrible nutrient paste. That's all, just tubes and tubes of it, shipped from the cyanid homeworld.
Hey, you never know, Jinx said. It could be pretty good.
Nope, Kizzy said. Definitely not. I snuck a tube of it once, for research.
Kizzy, Ashby said.
Kizzy ignored him.
Imagine something with the consistency of dry, cold nut butter, but with no flavor at all. No salt or anything. I tried putting it on toast, but it was just a waste of good toast.
Ashby sighed. And this from the woman who throws a fit if anybody even so much as glances at a bag of her fire shrimp.
Hey, Kizzy said, pointing her fork at him. Fire shrimp are a rare delicacy, okay?
They're a cheap snack, Sissix said.
A cheap snack you can only get from my colony, which makes them a rare delicacy. There are crates of Ohan's paste tubes in the cargo bay. I knew they wouldn't even notice if I sampled one. Supply and demand.
That's not what supply and demand means, Jenks said.
Sure it does.
Supply and demand does not mean please wantonly steal shit because there's more than enough to go around.
You mean like this?
She darted a hand forward and stole a bun off his plate. She crammed the whole thing in her mouth, forcing it in with her fingers, and began grabbing more from the breadbasket.
Ashby turned towards Rosemary, ignoring the war of the baked goods. So, Rosemary, let's hear about you. Any family back on Mars?
Rosemary took a calm sip of water. The question made her heart hammer a bit, but it would all be okay. She'd practice this.
Yeah, my dad works in off-world imports. My mom owns an art gallery.
It was a true statement, just missing a few key details.
I have an older sister, too, but she lives on Hagarem.
True.
She works for the GC Resource Allocation Bureau. Nothing fancy, just pushing formwork.
True.
We're not very close, though.
Definitely true.
Where'd you grow up?
Florence.
True.
Jenks pulled his attention away from wrestling with Kizzy over buns. He whistled.
Ooh, that's some prime real estate, he said. You must come from money.
Not really.
Lie.
It's just close to my dad's business.
True.
Sort of.
I was in Florence once, Kizzy said, when I was 12. My dad saved and saved and saved so we could go there for the Remembrance Day thing.
Stars, I'll never forget when everybody let those floating lanterns go out in that big open place.
Rosemary knew where she meant. New World Square, the capital's central gathering space. A wide stone plaza watched over by a statue of the city's eponym, Marcella Florence, the first human to set foot on Mars.
All those little lights going up and up like tiny ships. I thought it was the prettiest thing I'd ever saw.
I was there for that, Rosemary said.
No way,
she laughed. I don't think anybody missed the All Stories Festival. In fact, her father had been a major sponsor of the event, but she felt it best to leave that out. Remembrance Day was a human holiday commemorating the day that the last homesteader set off from Earth, the day the last humans left their inhospitable homeworld. The holiday had originated as an Exodan custom, but Remembrance Day had quickly gained popularity in both the Solar Republic and the extrasolar colonies. The All Stories Festival had marked the bicentennial Remembrance Day, and the surrounding event had been organized as a joint effort between Solan and Exodan officials. Practically the entire diaspora had turned up, down to every last handler and bureaucrat. The festival was meant as a gesture of friendship and unity among a fractured species, an acknowledgement that despite their difficult pasts, they could work together towards a bright galactic future. Not that anything had really come of it.
The diaspora was still ineffectual in the GC Parliament. Harmagians had money, Aeluans had firepower, Andrisks had diplomacy. Humans had arguments. No festival, no matter how lavish, was going to change that. But it had been a fine party, at least. Kizzy grinned at Rosemary.
Maybe we saw each other's lanterns.
Oh, did you get one of those ice creams there? The real milk ones? In one of those waffly bowl things, all covered with berry sauce and little chocolate bits? Oh, that sounds sweet, Dr. Chef said. If memory serves, I had two of those, said Rosemary. She smiled, hoping that it masked the tangle of homesickness filling her chest. She had worked so hard to get away, jumped through so many hoops, spent so many sleepless nights being afraid of getting caught. And yet there were bugs on her plate, and anti-grav nets beneath her feet, and a table full of strangers who could never know what she'd left behind. She was out in the open now, far from everything and anything that was familiar.
Speaking of sweet things, Dr. Chef said, setting his fork down with finality. Who wants dessert?
Even though her stomach was now full to bursting, Rosemary found it easy to make room for three of what Dr. Chef called spring cakes. Delicate, chewy, reminiscent of almonds, dusted with some zingy spice she couldn't identify. Not quite Remembrance Day ice cream with berry sauce, but then nothing ever would be. After he'd helped clear the table, Ashby settled into one of the benches tucked away in the garden. He pulled out his scrib and took a bite out of the last spring cake, Captain's prerogative. He gestured at his scrib, directing it towards one of the transport board's job feeds. Establishing connection, the screen read. Verifying access. As the progress icon pulsed in thought, he glanced back to the kitchen. Dr. Chef was behind the counter, showing Rosemary how to stack dirty dishes in the cleanser. She looked attentive, but a little lost. Ashby smiled to himself. First days were always hard. Sissix approached, a mug of tea in hand. So? She asked quietly, making a small gesture with her head back towards the kitchen. Ashby nodded and made room for her on the bench. So far, so good, he said under his breath. She seems friendly enough.
I have a good feeling about her, Sissix said, sitting down.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, she's a bit... Oh, stars. There isn't a good word for it in Clip. Isik. You know that one?
Ashby shook his head. He could muddle through Reskitkish if spoken slowly, but his vocabulary wasn't extensive.
Literally means egg soft, like a hatchling's skin when it first comes out of the shell.
Ah, okay. So, inexperienced. She rocked her head and thought.
Yes, but not quite. It implies that you'll toughen up in time.
He nodded, glancing at her thick scales. I'm sure she will.
Well, that's the thing about being Isik. If your skin doesn't harden...
She let her tongue fall out of her mouth and made a choking sound. She laughed. Ashby gave her a wry look. You are talking about babies here. She sighed.
Mammals, she said with fond exasperation.
She rested her head on his shoulder and put her hand on his knee. Coming from a human, the gesture would have been intimate, but he was used to it with Sissix. This was her version of casual.
Still trying to find us a follow-up?
She asked, nodding towards the scrib. The feed had connected, displaying a neat table of contract offers. Just seeing what's out there.
You won't get far with this feed.
Why?
Because these are upper-level gigs.
There was amusement in her voice.
You're tired.
No, he said. I'm just looking. He would have left the explanation there, but he could feel her looking at him, waiting for more. He exhaled. Just one of these pays more than our last three jobs combined.
Big ships get big money, she said. That's always been the way of things.
You don't need a big ship. Just a well-equipped ship. He looked around the garden. Recycled crates. A scavenged window. Hand-me-down planters. With the right upgrades, we could start applying for these jobs. Sissix started to chuckle, but stopped when she saw his face. Are you being serious?
I don't know, Ashby said. I wonder if I've got so comfortable in this kind of work that I never stopped to consider doing more. And we could, in theory. We're capable enough. We're good enough.
We are, Sissix said slowly. But we're not talking new circuit boards here. We'd need a new bore, and that'd cost you a standard's worth of profits right there. I'd want a new nav panel, because the one we've got is sticky enough as it is sometimes. We'd need a bigger ambi stock. More stabilizers, more buoys. I'm sorry. I don't mean to stomp all over your daydream here.
She gave his knee a friendly scratch with her claws.
Okay. Let's say you saved up enough. And we all got kitted out. And we could start taking high-level jobs. What would you do with that?
What do you mean?
I mean, why do you want that? Other than whatever Yoshi said that got under your skin.
He raised his eyebrows and smirked. How do you know? She laughed. Just a guess.
Ashby scratched his beard and thought, what did he want it for? After he'd first left home, all those years ago, he'd sometimes wondered if he'd go back to the fleet to raise kids, or if he'd settle down on a colony somewhere. But he was a spacer, through and through, and he had the itch for drifting. As the years went on, the thought of making a family had dwindled. The point of a family, he'd always thought, was to enjoy the experience of bringing something new into the universe, passing on your knowledge, and seeing part of yourself live on. He had come to realize that his life in the sky filled that need. He had a crew that relied on him, and a ship that continued to grow, and tunnels that would last for generations. To him, that was enough. But was it enough as it was now? He was content, sure, but he could do more. He could build grander things meant for greater numbers of people. He could give his crew a bigger cut, which he'd long wanted to do, and they certainly deserved. He didn't share Yoshi's hubris, but he couldn't deny that the idea of a human captain doing work traditionally left to the founding species gave him a spark of pride. He could... Oh, not to change the subject, but I meant to tell you, he said. I got a vid pack from Tessa today. Kai started walking.
Ah, oh, that's great, Sissix said.
Tell her I say congratulations.
She paused.
Okay, I have to be honest. I always forget learning to walk takes so long for you guys. Whenever I pictured your nephew, I pictured him running around.
Ashby laughed.
He will be soon enough.
He would be. Chasing after his big sister, banging knees, breaking bones, burning an ever-increasing amount of calories. Tessa always protested whenever Ashby sent her credits, but she never outright said no either. Neither did his father, who was having trouble with his eyesight despite repeated surgeries. What he needed was an optical implant, just as Tessa needed healthier food for her kids than a fleet job in a cargo bay could provide. He could do more.
Day 130, GC Standard 306. Technical Details. The sound of stim thump met Jenks as he walked through the corridors of the engine room. Pounding notes echoed off the fluid-filled pipes that stretched along the ceiling. He followed the sounds of drums, pipe flutes, grating strings, the wails of several Harmagians, and one unabashedly off-key human woman who was not part of the recording. He entered a roomy access area. This was Kizzy's lair. A well-lit space full of workbenches heaped with spare parts, hand-labeled containers, and forgotten amusements.
A tool cage stood sentry by one of the entrances, laden with every sort of implement imaginable. Two green armchairs, their balding fabric covered with patches, rested strategically near the warm tubes that pumped spent fuel down to the processing tanks. Between the chairs was a mech brewer, jerry-rigged into one of the engine's power lines. It was in need of cleaning. The mech tech herself was perched on a work ladder, her head and hands up inside an open ceiling panel. Her hips rocked in time with the drumbeats. She belted along to the throbbing music as she worked.
Punch him in the face! Monkeys like it too!
Hey, Kizzy, Jenks said.
Ida harmonica! These socks match my hat!
Kizzy! A tool clattered to the ground. Kizzy's hands clenched into fists as the music swelled to a stormy crescendo. She danced atop the shuddering ladder, her head still in the ceiling.
Socks! Match my hat! Socks! Match my hat! Step up some sweet toes! Socks! Match my hat!
Kizzy! Kizzy ducked her head down. She pressed the clicker strapped to her wrist, turning down the volume of the nearby thump box. Sup? Jenks quirked an eyebrow. Do you have any idea what this song is? Kizzy blinked. Socks match my hat, she said. She went back up into the ceiling, tightening something with her gloved hands. Sosk match my hat. It's banned in the Hermagian Protectorate.
We're not in the Hermagian Protectorate.
Do you know what this song's about?
Do you know I don't speak Hanto?
Banging the Hermagian royal family in glorious detail.
Oh, I like this song so much more now.
It's credited with setting off the riots on Soshka last year.
Huh. Well, if this band hates the establishment that much, then I doubt they'll care about me making up my own words. They can't oppress me with their correct lyrics. Fuck the system, she grunted, fighting with a stuck valve.
So what's up? I need the axial circuit coupler, and I have no idea where you put it.
Left side tool bench.
Jenks looked from side to side.
My left or your left?
My left. No, wait. Your left. Jenks walked to the bench, dragged over an empty crate, and climbed up to have a look. The piles of junk that covered the bench had merged, creating one nebulous omnipile. He sifted through the contents. A bunch of 3-gauge fuel tubing. A half-eaten bag of fire shrimp. Devastatingly hot, the label boasted. An assortment of dirty mugs. Several sets of schematics with added notes and doodles. An unopened box of... Jenks paused and craned his head towards Kizzy.
Out of curiosity, he said. What are you doing?
Kizzy showed him her palms. Her work gloves were caked with dense green slime. Gunk traps clogged. He looked back to the box on the bench.
You could have that done in 3 ticks if you used fix bots.
I don't have any bots.
So this box of bots I'm looking at is what, then?
Kizzy's head reappeared. She squinted at the bench.
Oh, those bots!
She disappeared into the ceiling again. He ran a finger over the box. It came back dusty.
You've never even opened these.
The company logo caught his eye.
Holy shit, Kiz, these are Tarkska bots. Do you have any idea how top of the line these are?
Bots are boring, she said.
Boring.
Jenks shook his head.
Once upon a time, the human race would have killed for the computing power stored in these little guys. Literally killed. And you got them buried under old snacks. Why do you even have these?
A glob of green gunk ran over the edge of the ceiling panel, spattering the floor. If ever we find ourselves in a situation so mind-fuckingly dire that you can't lend me a hand and Lovey can't shut things down, then I'll need them. Thankfully, that's never happened. She took a tool from her belt and stretched up onto the tips of her toes. Something metallic groaned in protest.
Oh, ass, just work, you stupid bastard thing.
Jenks brushed aside an empty glue pack and found the coupler. He clipped it to his tool belt.
Air filter's done, by the by. I'm gonna go check on Lovey. You want a smash before bed?
There was a reply, but it was muffled beneath clanging and swearing and dripping gunk. Jenks chuckled and walked out of the room. Kizzy remained in the ceiling, filthy and profane. He knew she was having a wonderful time. There were other Lovelaces out there, of course. Her core software platform could be purchased through any AI dealer. There were probably dozens of versions of her traveling through the galaxy. Maybe hundreds. Who knew? But they weren't her. The Lovey that Jenks knew was uniquely molded by the Wayfarer. Her personality had been shaped by every experience she and the crew had had together. Every place they'd been to. Every conversation they'd shared. And honestly, Jenks thought, couldn't the same be said for organic people? Weren't they all born running the basic human starter platform, which was shaped and changed as they went along? In Jenks' eyes, the only real difference in cognitive development between humans and AIs was that of speed. He'd had to learn to walk and talk and eat and all the other essentials before he'd begun to have a sense of identity. Lovey didn't have to worry about those things. There hadn't been a need for her to spend years learning how to monitor systems or switch off circuits. She had started life out with all the maturity and knowledge she needed to do her job competently. But in the three standards since she'd been installed, she'd become much more than just a ship's AI. She'd become someone wonderful. "Hey, you," Lovey said as Jenks stepped into the AI chamber.
"Hey yourself,"
he said, bending down to untie his boots. He slipped them off and stepped into a pair of sandals that never left the room. He found the idea of walking around in there with grubby, gunky shoes quite rude. The walls were covered with circuit panels, each a vital component of Lovey's framework, effectively her brain. In the middle of the room was her central core, resting on a pedestal within a temperature-controlled pit. Jenks spent a lot of time in the pit, even though his job didn't require it, and going in there with boots on felt like kissing somebody in the morning without brushing your teeth. "Good day?" she asked. He smirked.
"You know how my day was."
Lovey had cameras and sensors throughout the ship. She kept a protective eye on them at all times. It was a comfort, knowing that an accident or injury wouldn't go unnoticed, even in the most out-of-the-way corners. Lovey was always there to call for help, but it was the sort of thing that made a man pause before scratching his balls or picking his nose. Having an AI around forced good manners. "I still like to hear you tell it."
"Fair enough. It was a good day. I think we're ready for the punch tomorrow. Everything's working fine, far as I can tell."
"What do you think of Rosemary?"
"She seems nice. Hard to say. She's a little quiet and was pretty lagged to boot. We'll all need some time to get to know her."
"I felt so bad about having to flash her when she came aboard. She looked rough afterward. Not a very nice thing to do when meeting someone for the first time."
"I'm sure she understood you were only doing your job."
Jenks walked along the wall panels, looking them over for the little red lights that meant trouble. Lovey hadn't alerted him to any problems, but if something went really wrong, she might not be able to let him know. He did the rounds twice a day, just in case. "Do you think she's pretty?" Jenks raised an eyebrow towards the nearest camera, then glanced back at one of her analytical pathways. The filament was old. It would need replacing in a 10-day or two.
"Sure, I guess. Not like falling out of my seat pretty, but if I were a lady, I'd be content looking the way she does."
He stepped up onto a work stool and examined the upper circuit row.
"Why do you ask?"
"She seemed like the sort you'd find pretty."
"How so?"
"Do you remember that adventure sim you played 2 years ago? Black Sun Falling?"
"Of course I do. Great sim. There were archaeologists who said they couldn't tell the difference between the arcanic ruins in the sim and the real deal."
"Do
Do you remember the love interest you chose?
What was her name?
Mia. Yeah, well-written character. I liked her storyline a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it occurred to me, when Rosemary boarded the ship, that she's got a nice smile and a short crop of curls, just like Mia did. So I thought she might be your cup of tea. Jenks chuckled.
That's a fair line of reasoning. I didn't know you kept track of these things.
I like to know what you like.
I like you.
Jenks got off the stool, set down the coupler, and walked to the pit. The inspection could wait. He put on the heavy sweater that lay folded by the edge of the pit, just where he'd left it the day before. He climbed down into the temperature-controlled air, a cool contrast to the warm yellow light that pulsed from Lovey's core.
If I had found her pretty, would that bother you?
Lovey laughed.
No,
jealousy's stupid.
Just because it's stupid doesn't mean you can't feel it.
True. But what would be the point of me getting jealous over someone who actually has a face? Or breasts? Or hips? Or however it works? You're designed to find bodies attractive, Jenks. Enjoy them. She paused. If it were legal for me to have a body, what kind would you want me to have?
Well, here's a question, said Jenks. I hadn't really thought about it.
Liar. Jenks sat down and leaned back against the wall. He could feel the light vibration of her cooling system buzz against his scalp. He had, of course, thought about Lovey in a body. Many, many times.
What kind of body would you want to have?
Jenks cantered. That's way more important. I'm not sure. That's why I've been paying attention to what you pay attention to. I don't know what it's like to be in any form other than what I am, so it's hard to voice my desires on that front. It's not as if I'm in here pining away for legs all day long.
Tell that to the FDS.
The Friends of Digital Sapience were one of those organizations that had their hearts in the right place, but their heads firmly up their asses. On paper, Jenks believed a lot of the same things they did, namely that AIs were sapient individuals worthy of the same legal rights that everyone else had. But the FDS went about it all wrong. For starters, they didn't have a lot of techs in their ranks. They ignored the actual science behind artificial cognition in favor of a bunch of fluffy nonsense, making AIs out to be organic souls imprisoned within metal boxes. AIs weren't like that. Comparing an AI to an organic sapient was like comparing a human to a Harmagian. You could find similarities, and they deserved equal respect, but under the hood, they operated in fundamentally different ways. Jenks was all for proper recognition of AI rights, but the FDS's inability to speak about digital minds with any sort of accuracy was more of a hindrance than a help. Acting all sanctimonious while spouting bad info was a terrible way to win a debate, but a great way to piss people off.
That's exactly what I mean, Lovey said. They act like all AIs want a body. Granted, I think I do, but that doesn't mean all of us do. That's such an incredibly organic bias. The idea that your squishy physical existence is some sort of pinnacle that all programs aspire to. No offense.
None taken,
he thought for a moment.
That's kind of hypocritical, isn't it? We assume organic bodies are so awesome, everybody else might want them. Then we go off to get gene tweaks to look younger or slimmer or whatever.
You've got a few modifications yourself. No tweaks, but still. Do you think that's different from someone wanting to look a few years younger? Aren't all bodily changes about vanity?
Said
Jenks. He felt the weight of the spacers in his ears. He recalled the thin sunburned sting of a needle driving ink down into his skin.
That's a good question.
He tapped his mouth with his fingers.
I don't know. You know I get pretty squicked over tweaks, so I guess my opinion there isn't exactly objective. But I do think something like an anti-aging tweak is done out of a lack of self-esteem, because you feel like you're not good enough as you are. all the things I've done to my body, I've done out of love. Seriously, I've gotten ink to remind me of all sorts of places and memories, but at the core, everything I've had done has been my way of saying that this is my body. That I don't want the body everybody else told me I should have. Dr. Sheff's the only doctor I've ever had who's never once told me that my life would be easier if I got a few tweaks. You know, so I could be a normal height. Fuck that. If I'm gonna make changes to my body, they're gonna be changes that were my idea. I think I feel the same way, Lovey said, even though it's a moot point for me. Any body talk is entirely hypothetical for me, unless some laws change. Do you really want to have a body? He hesitated, feeling awkward about what he wanted to ask next. It's not just because of me, is it? No. I go back and forth on it, but I think the pros outweigh the cons. Okay, Jenks said, folding his hands across his stomach. Cons first. Cons can only be in one room at a time, unable to simultaneously look inside the ship and outside of it, needing to physically jack my head into the linkings any time I want to look something up. Or, well, I could use a scrib, I guess, but that seems so slow. I have always been jealous of that, Jenks said. For Lovey, checking a reference or reading a feed was as simple as activating the part of her cognitive processor that had linking access. He'd always imagined it to be like having a download library inside your head, full of books you could read through in a matter of seconds. Honestly, I think most of my cons stem from concerns about perception and spatial awareness. That's why I think the pros carry more weight. They're more varied. I could get used to having only one set of eyes, I think. It could be restful. Or boring, I'm not sure. Maybe a little of both. Let's have your pros. Leaving the ship, that's a big one. I don't feel like I'm missing out as I am now, but you all seem to have so much fun when you hop over to orbiters or down planetside. What else? Having dinner with the crew, face-to-face conversations, seeing the sky from the ground. She paused. Having the ability to be a real companion for you. You know, with all the trimmings. Even sitting down, Jenks felt his knees go weak. Lovey sighed. It's a frivolous line of thinking, with things as they are. But even so, you haven't answered my question.
What question?
What kind of body would you want me to have? Or perhaps a better question is, what do you find pretty?
I'm not sure I can sum that up easily. It really depends on the person.
Okay. What did the women you've coupled with before look like?
Jenks let out a hearty laugh. Are you making a database?
She paused. Maybe. Jenks gave a fond smirk.
Lovey, if you were able to have a body, it should look how you want it to look.
He relaxed back into the wall and trailed his fingers down a bundle of cables.
I'd find you pretty in any package.
Stars, you're so full of it. Lovey laughed, but that's why I love you.
Feed source. The Thread. The official news source of the Exodon Fleet. Public. Clip. Item name. Date. Evening news summary. Galactic, 130306. Encryption, 0. Translation path, 0. Transcription, vid, text. Node identifier, 7182-312-95. Ashby Santoso.
Hello and welcome to our evening update. I'm Quinn Stevens. We begin tonight's headline summary with news from the fleet. Yesterday marked the fourth anniversary of the Oxymoco disaster. Memorial events were held throughout the fleet in commemoration of the deaths of the 43,756 Exodons who lost their lives after a transport crash, compounded by fatigued bulkheads on the Oxymoco, led to rapid decompression of several lodging decks.
Yesterday, all major fleet vessels turned off their lights for 2 minutes at 1416, the time of the accident. The disaster was also commemorated on Mars this year with the unveiling of a memorial statue in the Samurakami Botanical Gardens. Martian President Kevin Liu was present at the ceremony and dedicated the memorial to the families aboard the Oxymoco and to all our courageous brothers and sisters in the fleet. Fleet Admiral Ranya May thanked the Martian government for the gesture, stating, "Our two societies no longer turn a blind eye to the tragedies that befall the other. This is a testament to how far we have come in our efforts to close the gap between us." In other fleet news, the Marabunta scare aboard the Nuit is finally over. The last remaining patient has been released from quarantine and granted a clean bill of health. The Fleet Health Office is confident that no traces of the virus remain aboard fleet vessels. A statement released this morning reminds all fleet denizens and boarders to reschedule regular Immubot upgrades with their healthcare providers and to not take chances with unlicensed tech implant clinics. It is believed that the Marabunta virus was brought aboard the Nuit by an individual who recently patronized a fringe colony implant clinic. In response to the outbreak, the health office is working to upgrade docking bay scanners throughout the fleet in order to better detect individuals carrying hijacked bots. Next 10 days, the 31st annual Bug Fry Festival aboard the Domu, the transportation office anticipates high amounts of shuttle traffic and docking bay delays throughout the duration of the festival. All persons traveling between ships are advised to plan accordingly, even if you do not intend on attending the festival. In the news from the Solar Republic, former Phobos Fuel CEO Quentin Harris III was officially indicted on charges of weapons smuggling, conspiracy, and crimes against sapient kind. Harris is alleged to have been instrumental in a smuggling ring that delivered illegal weapons, including gene targeters, to several Taremi clans, who are currently engaged in a civil war. Harris was arrested earlier this standard after a data cache of evidence documenting his involvement with the smuggling ring was uploaded to several linking feeds. Harris claims that the evidence has been falsified by business rivals and has pled not guilty. In the news from the independent human colonies, the construction of a new water reclamation plant on Seed was halted last 10 days.